something really came into my consciousness. Sometimes I describe it like a lightning bolt. And it was like, this is the kind of music you'll do now. The reason I was able to recognize it so easily and not resist it was because I had been, I had had this experience of real presence just months before, and I had continued to cultivate that and was spending time every day meditating, being in nature. Like, I really was in a very connected space. I was opening into all the ways where I could connect with my deeper truth. So I was in this time of my life where I really recognized the importance of silence and cultivating practices that create that kind of deep stillness. And so I think from that place, I could receive the guidance more easily.
Hello and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, and I'm so excited to have my guest today, Brenda McMurrow. We have been trying to get this conversation since maybe a year ago when we met at Andara. And finally, it's happening. So I'm so excited. Welcome to the podcast, Brenda.
Oh, thank you, Yael. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Me too. I'll just mention that Brenda is a wonderful singer-songwriter of devotional music who travels and performs worldwide. She has released 5 celebrated albums of deeply moving and heartfelt music, which are on Spotify. So I recommend everybody go check them out because they're really beautiful. So
I'm
so happy to have this conversation with you finally.
Yeah. Me too.
I would really love to start from how you really ended up being a devotional music artist.
Yes. Well, it was an interesting way that I suddenly, it felt like a sudden shift from being a folk rock kind of pop artist in Canada. In about 2004, I was taken to a devotional music workshop, a kirtan, which is the call and response singing of mantras. I went to this workshop, and it was actually the very first time that I really had ever heard mantras. And I had just months before, I had just had a very powerful spiritual experience where I really felt a huge shift in my being. Hard to put into words, one of those kinds of experiences. And so I had that experience. I went to this workshop and I heard the mantras, and it was beyond my mind. But what happened was I had an experience of noticing how the mantras actually helped me to go right back into that space that I had had during that spiritual experience of really feeling the source of my being. So the mantras felt like a vehicle into that, or a way to open into it again. So I couldn't believe it. I was so happy. And something really came into my consciousness. Sometimes I describe it like a lightning bolt. And it was like, this is the kind of music you'll do now. Me, that I'll do now.
Yeah.
And I remember this really interesting experience of my my thinking mind saying to me, well, what do you mean you're going to do that now? You don't know what it is. And my heart, or this part of me, just was like, doesn't matter. This is what we're doing now. And it was so peaceful and beautiful. So I didn't even listen to the mind, you know, as it was saying, ah, you don't know. It was a very definitive moment in time. It wasn't gradual at all. It was so interesting. So a lot of times in my life, things have come gradually. This was just like, now this is it. So
especially the big decisions.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was, and what was interesting is like, normally I think I felt like I was making decisions in my life, but this was even beyond that. You know, it was like, this is just the way it is, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, so I just went on this journey. Like, I knew that initially I would just have to learn what this was. I didn't even know what it was called. All I knew that I was, is that I was singing in Sanskrit with a group of people, and the leader was singing and we would sing back, and that it produced this powerful effect. And it actually facilitated me just kind of dropping into this presence, incredible presence. So there's a, that's kind of the moment. And then the journey began. So from 2004 to about 2008, I was just learning everything that I could, going to India, writing melodies to my favorite mantras that I was discovering. And then I released my first Kirtan album in 2008, and then just started to tour, pretty much all the time, all over the place, just doing this music, because it just felt like a major calling that I was to follow.
That is a beautiful story. Incredible. And I find that there's so many things that are interesting to me about that, because a lot of times, even when we know kind of what we're supposed to do, which way we're supposed to go, I would even be so bold as to say that we all kind of know inside which way we need to go. But then we have so many layers that block this knowing from actually producing action. The layers of fear and our perceptions of what is the right thing to do, our society's perceptions of what is the right thing to do. And it was it's beautiful that it came to you in such a clear way that you didn't have any question about it. Do you know to say why it was in this way? What about it was so clear for you?
Yeah, I believe it feels true to me that the reason I was able to recognize it so easily and not resist it was because I had been, this experience of real presence just months before, and I had continued to cultivate that, and was spending time every day meditating, being in nature. Like, I really was in a very connected space. And I was allowing is not the word. I was opening into all the ways where I could connect with my deeper truth. So I was in this time of my life where I really recognized the importance of silence and cultivating practices that create that kind of deep stillness. And so I think from that place, I could receive the guidance more easily. And I've noticed that throughout my life, is that whenever I am in a time when I'm not crazily distracted and, you know, going this way and that in my mind, then I can hear. You know, I bet a lot of, perhaps you and a lot of people that are listening might be able to relate to that. Like, for example, being in a forest and sitting down and just hearing the birds and feeling the wind and listening to the, you know, the leaves rustle, that there may be these moments of some clarity arises and a knowing just comes out of nowhere. And it's because of that stillness and the quietude. And so, yeah, so I think that that is a big reason why I was just able to access what is in a much clearer way from that more still place.
That's beautiful. And I completely resonate with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And actually, throughout the podcast, I've asked this of a few people because there are all the time points in our life that we have to make choices that in the moment can be the most important choice of our life. Who knows how it is in the, you know, the bigger view of things. But the answer that I keep receiving is basically find enough silence in order to be able to hear. Because just as you mentioned, we are so distracted all the time that we have the answer, but we just can't hear it. So one of the practices that you mentioned was being in nature. What are some other practices that you can recommend to people? Maybe also taking into account that most of the listeners are living in cities and have jobs and maybe children and responsibilities that they just can't let go of. So what would you recommend? Yeah. What are some practices that you use to get this clarity, this space in order to receive clarity?
Yeah. Well, just going back to the nature, aspect, because I'm thinking of for people living in the cities, often when people talk about getting, your feet, like your bare feet on the earth, sometimes people in cities say, well, I can't, that's hard to do. And yeah, I know. I've been there. but there is always a way. And even if you can't get your feet on the earth, which, you know, grounding or, earthing, they call it, whatever name there's this real power to getting the feet on the earth. Even if you can't do that, say it's snowing, like if you're in Toronto, Ontario, and for 2 months, there's a lot of snow, then going and actually putting your arms around a tree, like really there is a thing about tree hugging that is like no wonder people do it. I mean, yeah. Like, you know, it's to protect the trees, but it's also just to connect, with that great, power that comes from the earth. And, so connecting with nature in an actual physical way is really important. I try to get my feet on the grass at least 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. I live in a warm climate, so I'm able to do it. I'm in Mexico. So, and just touching a tree, putting my hands on a tree. So that's one way, and it doesn't have to be for a long time. I mean, the longer the better, but even short bits of time. And I mean, a practice that has been so powerful for me has been chanting and, singing mantras. And even if someone isn't really that familiar with mantras, that, you know, Spotify or any streaming service or buying music on Bandcamp and, or YouTube, and it's accessible to us. We can find mantras, and kirtan that we really love to listen to. So having a playlist of these beautiful sounds can be very wonderful. Like while we're washing the dishes, putting that on and having the vibrations. And I say the vibrations because Sanskrit is a vibrational language. And, there's a healing, like an innate healing power to them, or to it and to the mantras that can come through. So if we're just like bathing in it, listening to it, singing along, so mantras, and also one can just, you know, adopt a short mantra that resonates for oneself and chant it on their own. We don't need any device at all to go with it. So an example of one would be Om Namah Shivaya. And this is basically saying, I bow down to the true self. It's also calling in the energy of transformation. And so Om Namah Shivaya. So I could be walking along and either saying out loud or singing just Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. And right away, even just doing it four times, there's a dropping in that occurs. So for anyone who's new to mantra kirtan, exploring some of this just by listening and reading up on it, you may resonate with it. And so that's another practice. And then of course, meditating, finding time each day, preferably in the morning, because it sets the tone for the whole day. You know, I sometimes feel if I don't meditate in the morning, it's like evening and the whole day has passed and I may not that day. So if I do it in the morning, it's just like, ah, yeah, set the tone, done it. So again, it could be for 10 minutes. It could be longer, but those would be the three main ones: connecting with nature, meditating, and mantra. And of course, breath, being mindful of our breath and focusing on the breath kind of is included in all of that. And that's a way, those are the ways that I mainly recalibrate, get back into the center. Not that I'm not, just to add, it's like, it's not that I'm ever out of my center, but I think I believe I'm out of my center sometimes when the thoughts are dominating. Right. It's just, these practices help me just to realize where I've always been. I can't ever move from the true being that I am. It's impossible. It's just that is what is. So it's like, it's just reducing the things that make me believe that I'm not. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. It like kind of lowers the volume on the distractions and heightens the volume on the truth.
That's a beautiful way to say it. Yes.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And I just realized that even me living in a country, I'm in Israel and it's been pretty cold lately. It's still February, but it's a warmer country. I don't think I had my feet on the ground for a long time.
Maybe it's time.
I'm just realizing it. And I live 7 minutes away from the beach. Oh,
perfect.
I should go put my feet in the sand very soon.
Yes. That would be great. Yeah. I know we're never unhappy that we've done it, right? It's always like, oh, that was a great idea.
Definitely. Wow. Thank you. That's a really great tip. Thanks.
Yeah, it's good to have these reminders. I love it when somebody says something that I know already, but I haven't been doing, and they just say it. I'm like, ah, thank you for the reminder.
I didn't even, I've heard of grounding and earthing. I've heard of all that, but I didn't realize how different it is to be in nature, around nature, to be around nature than to be in nature.
Right.
Because, I go past the beach almost every day. Like, I see grass and trees all the time, but I don't, interact with the nature enough. The nature. It's a separate thing.
As if, right?
Yeah. So if we're already on the subject of transitions and changes, I wanted to ask you about, maybe you can think of a different example of transition that you went through throughout your life that has been challenging, and what strengths and skills have you had to develop in order to go past this challenge or this transition and arrive to where you are today?
That's great. Things are popping to mind of different challenges. And the one that comes up most, strongly right now is when I, separated. I was married back in the early 2000s. And when we separated, it was a really, really challenging time. And I think a number of people can probably relate to that a marriage breakup is can be very traumatic, very difficult. No matter what the situation is, it's just difficult. And what I learned during that time was basically allowing myself to go deeply into my feelings, like into the grief that was there, the all kinds of emotions. And I think in my, now this was years ago, but before that, I think I just always really loved to be in the happy place. You know, I'm a 7 Enneagram for anybody who knows the Enneagram. You know, it's just like, let's keep the energy high, new experiences, let's have a great time, you know, and which is awesome. However, what the shadow side of that is for me was that I didn't really go deeply into the parts of life or the experiences in life that I deemed as being too negative or dark. And so when I went through the marriage breakup, I really, it's almost like I had no choice, but I also consciously knew that I needed to just feel deeply, deeply feel and cry and, you know, just let myself get so low. And then what came from that was actually a lightening and an opening into parts of me and into more truth, more actual peace within me. But I had to go through all of that to see something and feel something I never had before. Yeah.
Definitely, because I feel like that is definitely a skill, being able to deepen into the heart. Actually, I have this in the notes because you wrote to me in a message maybe a year ago that this is a subject you would like to speak about on the podcast.
Oh, did I?
Yes. So it's interesting.
Great idea
that you brought it up.
It is, because I don't remember that.
Yeah. And I think that is definitely a skill, and a skill that we are not taught in school. We're not usually taught by our parents to be able to sit with hard emotions. And if that is something that came from a difficult experience, then I feel like you're one of the lucky ones.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And to actually recognize that that's how it worked. Yeah. And I've, over the years, I've, when other difficult things have come, my reflex often was, well, let's just do something that's happy. But then I would remember, oh yeah, go in deep. And luckily I had, you know, friends around me that were really good at saying, let's just be super present with what's going on. So there's these reminders. Yeah. So there's still an inclination to avoid, but I don't do that half as much anymore. But it's such a powerful thing to actually meet things as they are instead of how I think they should be.
I feel like also with time, you, like any skill, you get better at it in a way, and you get more comfortable with the hard emotions. Not that the hard emotions don't come, but you just get more comfortable with being with them.
Yes, exactly. I think that that's something that's wonderful to recognize, is that we're human and difficult, challenging things occur in life. And it's really, it's how do we meet them, and how do we resist them or not? And the not resisting is super important. And that doesn't mean, you know, not standing up for oneself or not speaking up. You can do all of that, but at the same time, accept that things are happening as they are. You know, like, I think sometimes that can be confusing. It's like folks might think that they're being a doormat if they accept things the way they are, but it's not really like that. It's just saying, this is how it is, and this is how I'm being guided to approach the situation right now. But yeah, the acceptance of what is has been a great gift for me to recognize in my life. It's made it a lot easier.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned a very important distinction here, because there is a difference between accepting things as they are and accepting how you're feeling about how things are,
which
is different, because like you cannot accept things as they are. You can choose to consciously change it, but okay, you're still feeling bad about it. So if you start to resist that feeling, then actually you lose your power to be able to take the steps you need to take to change whatever needs to be changed.
That's right. That's right. If you actually allow yourself to feel the sadness, for example, and if tears want to come, then what a beautiful way to just recognize what's happening and not make a big story out of it. You know, it doesn't need to go on forever. You know, you could, if you feel it and fully and allow it to be, then it will do what it will do. But it allows more spaciousness, right? To meet life, to meet the situation clearly.
Yeah, that's been a very important practice for me lately, because actually until like this summer, I'm pretty involved in personal development and spirituality and all of this. I it's the thing that I love learning about the most. And just over the last summer, I had a very big realization about the difference between actually allowing myself to express hard emotions in different ways, like crying or speaking or, you know, dancing or whatever it needs to be, or singing, whatever it needs to be, at the certain point. But I was under a misconception that me staying leveled emotionally and not getting too angry or too sad was me managing it well. But then I started to have like psoriasis on my skin and like pain in my back. And I realized that staying leveled, like, okay, I was like, okay, I use my breath and I'm staying leveled. But then I was actually pushing it down. And I thought I was doing it in a healthy way, but over the summer, it's been a very important learning experience about what actually do we need to do with these emotions? Because as you said, it's not about pretending that they're not there or letting things be as they are and just accepting them. You do have a part in expressing how you think things should change, or if there is an injustice, or if you feel that you are wronged. But that is different than not expressing it at all.
Yeah. It's a bit of a dance with recognizing how that works within us. And I, in terms of speaking up, one thing that I've learned is that, if I'm feeling a strong emotion, that might not be the best time to do it, but shortly thereafter, yes. You know, say for example, we all know sometimes people will write on social media and you just know it's coming from such a triggered place that it doesn't come across the same as if it would if someone was triggered and had a lot of emotions and they went and they just really felt them or shared it with a friend or wrote it out and then came to a place
or cried
like all or screamed into a pillow, you know, like all of it. And then, you know, allow it. And then share from a place that is more steady. That there's been some spaciousness added to the situation, then that communication is much better received by others, and it can create some real change. So, yeah, it's an adventure for all of us humans to kind of just see, to meet ourselves in all these different ways and to see what works. And it's not always the same for everyone, and everyone will interpret you know, what we're saying in their own way or what they hear from someone else. So we just being open and take what resonates. And then, yeah, just being gentle with ourselves too. Like, and knowing we're not going to be just always like perfectly navigating this life. It's like ups and downs, just part of the beauty of it. Right. Yeah. It's quite a journey.
Definitely. I feel like it's kind of like when something happens, there is this buildup of energy inside and it kind of creates an internal pressure. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we have to do is like open the lid, let the pressure out. And then you don't speak to the person or you don't come to the solution in a way that's like the first initial letting the pressure out of the space, you know. It's like after the pressure has been let out, you come from a, as you said, like a leveled space.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's perfect. And so much of what creates our tension is our thinking about how we're thinking about things and the thoughts that we're having. So if we can inquire into our thoughts as well, that can be really powerful. You know, just looking at what we're thinking. And I find writing, like doing self-inquiry by writing things out, like just really seeing the truth of the matter, because sometimes a thought will say, you know, for example, that person is being a total jerk. Then if I write that out and say, is that true? Sort of like the Byron Katie work, if you've ever heard of her, the four questions, you know, just asking, is it true? We can loosen that grip on thinking that's the reality. And yeah, and then we can come to the situation with more openness for sure.
Oh, cool. So you suggest to write it out, or at least that's what you do. You write it out and through that you receive more clarity.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll write things out. Sometimes I just do it as a quick process in my own mind. You know, I'll just do, oh, is that true? And then kind of allow, some space around it. Sometimes I'll journal it if it's something like, and yeah, a really easy way to do it is just to say, is this true? And I mean, Byron Katie has a whole process, and I'm not an expert on it, but I think it's called the four questions. I'm sure a lot of people listening will know. I just remember learning that, is that true? And also I come from, some real experience with self-inquiry into asking, you know, who am I? And that can also be, is this true? Like really, we're just looking, in self-inquiry to, see what is underneath perception, underneath held beliefs. You know, it's just asking an open-ended question that helps turn the mind back towards more of a source. I know it's kind of a lot. It's like that would be a whole other conversation about actual self-inquiry, but, just starting with the being in the question is a great way to approach things in life, or at least it's really helped me.
Definitely. I find that is the key of moving our lives forward. I even read it in a beautiful book, but I know the name only in Hebrew. So maybe I'll find it like in the show. I'll write it in the show notes. But in the book, it's kind of told like a story, like The Alchemist, but they teach a lot of very important lessons about just life and how it works. And one of the lessons is that the way that we guide our lives forward is not through looking for answers, but by looking for the right questions.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, so I actually also have this written down. It's crazy how the conversation is flowing, but I wanted to ask you, hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200 or 300 hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
Do you have certain questions that you use to guide yourself or to start to, you know, make the wheels turn when you're facing different transitions or choices that you need to make or professional decisions or anything like that?
Like a specific question that I would use? Yeah, I mean, one that I do is this true? Like what I was just mentioning before, it helps to loosen things up a little bit. Also, I think even without necessarily asking a question, I remind myself that there is no solidly correct answer to anything. You know, everything is always changing. So I think I relax back into that. I'll remind myself if I feel like I'm holding, like I need to know this. It's just like, no, just like relax and allow, you know, because the answer or the guidance for the next moment is going to come unto itself. And actually nothing that I do, like the stronger I grip my mind, is not going to actually help bring about the answer to what I'm looking for. So I think just really realizing that there isn't a particular answer really helps very much. I mean, I use the "Who am I?" question that some listeners might know of. Ramana Maharshi, the great sage from the last century from India, he taught that the way to recognizing the truth of who we are is by asking the question, "Who am I?" Which is really an unanswerable question in the end. But what it helps is it helps us to see the things that we're not. I know I'm kind of diverging off from your question a little bit, but it all ties kind of back in together, is this being in the question. And I think I feel like more than ever, in the world, in our lives, we need to be in the question, because others might agree. There's been a lot of like, it's got to be this way. It's got to be this way. And that's been really the way we've been living this last few years. There hasn't been a lot of like, well, let's really question all kinds of things. So in my life, yeah, I've been finding it so helpful to just allow other perspectives to come into my consciousness. And if I notice that I'm just always thinking one thing has to be this way or that way, just reminding myself to be open to other possibilities. And just being open as much as possible.
Definitely. Yeah. First of all, completely agree with you. I would love to hear a little bit more about this question of who am I? Like, how do you approach that in answering? How does that help you make decisions or guide you on your path? What are you looking for when you ask yourself this question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it is kind of a big, it's a very simple question, yet our minds can very much want to take over and understand the question, when it's actually a question that can be used to dissolve the thinking mind. And again, it would take a lot more sort of exploration, but if anyone feels resonant with this idea, I would recommend, you know, looking into this. An ancient yogic philosophy called Advaita Vedanta, and this is non-duality. And using the question, "Who am I?" is part of that. And essentially, if I can just put it in a nutshell, when one asks the question, "Who am I?" or for example, if I was to just say to myself right now, who's the one talking? I'm not looking for an answer like, oh, you're Brenda, or, oh, you're this. It's more just, it's an open-ended question. And what it does, the power of the question is it allows the mind to kind of turn itself back to the more, or the source of where the question is coming from. And now if we try to figure this out with the mind, then we just go, oh, that doesn't make sense. But if we just kind of open, like, okay, who's the one talking? And just leave it. Don't try to answer it. What it does for me is it produces this relaxation happens. And in Advaita Vedanta, or in some of the practices of Advaita Vedanta, this inquiry is something that happens all the time. So it's just constantly looking at the things that we take ourselves to be. So if I say, oh, I'm the one sitting here in this chair, if I really feel into that, I might recognize that there's something more than just the one sitting in the chair. So I don't want to get like kind of too complicated with this, but if we were like, for example, if we just sit right now, it's for anyone who's listening, notice, you know, this one sitting here, and I just take a moment and I just allow that to be. I might notice that there is a sense of something else as well. And perhaps it could be a vibration. Perhaps it's a spaciousness or a feeling of presence. And when this happens, when we just spend that moment, we begin to see that the one sitting in the chair might not necessarily be who I really am. So in non-duality, it's like we notice the things that we're not by asking the question, like, who am I? So that's a little snippet into one part of my real love and interest. And that is, the self-inquiry, non-duality aspect.
Beautiful. And I completely agree. Like when we understand what we're not, and when we tune into the bigger part of ourselves, so looking at outside of the little individual, you know, life that we're living, and remember that we're actually part of this whole beautiful cosmos on this floating ball in the middle of space, then your perspective shifts. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you make decisions in a different way.
Right, right. Yeah. I think when people can come from a place of that knowing, or even a touching into that knowing of the expanse, or even sometimes people will have an experience that they can never put into words. But if they continue to like rest back into that knowing, then yeah, everything, all the actions in this relative plane can actually be informed and held by that knowing. And it really shifts our experience in the world.
Yeah. And for me, it also reminds me of the fact that really we are a speck of dust in the whole perspective of time and space and the world. And that gives me a reminder that we have a responsibility to actually enjoy our life and contribute to the world, and that our lifespan is so short in terms of global lifetime. And how can we actually use this time to be joyful?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like we're a speck of dust. It's more like our, or it's not more like, but it part of expanding on that is that our individual identity is that speck of dust. And what a great opportunity to almost to don this suit, to come into a world experience and to have an experience, and then also to do practices that remind ourselves that we are actually all of it beyond form. But while we're in form, to just like you said, to find joy, to enjoy this gift. I mean, it's not incredible. Not to waste it. That's right. And at the same time, not to hold so tightly that we think this is who we are and this is who, you know, we can't let go. It's just like, no, we're having an opportunity to experience this. And, you know, consciousness itself or source itself is getting to be Yael and Brenda looking through two different apertures, right? And expressing in these unique ways. And it's like, it's so glorious. So if we're able to not hold tightly to that as being the ultimate truth, then we get to have the experience. And then we get to know that it all comes from a much more exquisite place or beingness that we can't even describe, you know? So it's like both. Yeah,
definitely. That's a wonderful point. And that kind of makes me want to take it to our time here as this expression of this personality and our responsibility in the contribution of the creation of this world. And I'll expand on that a little bit because I feel that each one of us has a creation that we were meant to add to the world. So whether it's music as in your life or some person, it might be something that's considered creative, like doing art or like furniture or something like that. But I also feel like contributing a creation to the world can be being a really wonderful marketer and allowing people to communicate their message in a wonderful way, or being a surgeon, that can also be a creation and a contribution in a creative way to society and the evolution of humanity and just the world. So I would love for you to speak a little bit about your personal process in creating. You have created 5 albums. You create music all the time. So you also add to the world with your beautiful voice and your beautiful presence. And you also have this process internally of birthing this music into the world. So I would love to hear a little bit about your creative process.
Sure. Well, I love what you were just saying, you know, that each person, no matter what they choose to do in their life, can bring such beautiful, well, I'm paraphrasing, but presence to whatever they create. So whatever job they have, whatever they do. And so I think that I feel that creation really springs from a place of presence within. And when I'll get to sort of my musical creation process, but I wanted to say that when people, no matter what they're doing in the world, when they find peace within their own selves, within their own heart, then it allows this openness for how life wants to move through them, to come through without there being, you know, much blocking that progression or much resistance, you know. So it's like our number one focus can be uncovering peace and love within ourselves, for ourselves. That is number one. You know, we want to create peace out in the outer world, of course, but if we don't find it here, and I know this has been said so many times, but it cannot be oversaid. It has to start here. And so I feel that with my creative process, The more that I actually did deepen into that peace within me, the more easefully songs came and different ideas for creative projects would come. I was always a, not always, from my early 20s, I was a musician and I played and I wrote songs. And I would write songs because I loved to, but I would also get really kind of involved mentally. And I would think, okay, what will be a good hook? What will sell the best? You know, it was very much about like very focused on what do other people want, from this music? And which just, that's what I thought was normal to do. And then when I had this, you know, kind of big transformation happen in 2004, I started writing from whatever just wanted to come through me. And I stopped thinking about what other people would want to listen to. And then that's when actually things expanded even more. Cause I just did it. I guess I could describe it like I did it because I loved it. And it's like love was coming through. It was happening kind of unto itself. And, I didn't have an agenda. And it was like, oh, isn't that interesting? Without the agenda, then now actually more people want to listen to the music because the people I think that resonated with it felt, maybe more of a, I don't know if this is the word, a purity about it or just a naturalness about it, that they could be like, yeah, I feel that. That feels natural to me. So, I feel that with my, say that again.
Authenticity.
People really love that. And it's not to say that like I'm constantly authentic or I never think about, you know, what other people, no, I do. I do, have those moments for sure. But typically when I create music now, it doesn't have it the way that it used to, that like it's got to be this way. It's just sort of, okay, how does it want to be? How does this want to be? And, sometimes one of the more, like kind of like uncomfortable parts of my creative process is when I'm in the cocooning phase and I've just come out of it, like literally in the last 3 weeks, I was just like, I feel like I spent a year just incubating. I mean, I was writing a little bit, but I was, there wasn't a lot moving. And thankfully, I know that that's a really vital part of the creative process is to not force it. It's really important. Yeah. And that something was happening. And then, I think, yeah, it's like the middle of January, I suddenly was like, oh, and all these like ideas and started coming. And I was like, yeah, right. They were just gestating, you know, they were inside. So my process can go for months and months, where not a lot seems to be moving. And then suddenly it's coming out. So, yeah, I think just being an allowance of how it wants to move. I have a dear friend named Dorothy Walters. She's a mystic poet, or I should say was, because she just passed away at the age of 94 last week. And she's amazing. If you can check out her mystic poetry, Dorothy Walters, I did an interview with her, sort of like what we're doing now, where I was asking her questions. And she said that, you know, creativity and ideas can like come flying by us and we have to be ready to catch them. I thought it was so cute. And it's not that we're like, you know, that's mine. It's more sort of like I pictured her with her pen for poetry. Here's the idea. And she jumps up, you know, and the pen then catches the inspiration and creates this incredible poem. And so I think that's like for me with music too. It's just like, I happen to be available. So let's have it come through these lips and through this guitar or pen. So being available, knowing we can't force it, being open to grace, essentially, I think is the way.
That touched my heart in such a deep way. Thank you for that message and that reminder. And I feel that was exactly what I would love to have heard you say. Not that I would ever want to try to make you say something, like, not that maybe it sounded that way, but I
love
feel
it.
Like, but that was such a perfect answer, because that is the creative process. It's, if I think about it like a seed, a lot of time we use the analogy of a seed, like first you plant the seed in the earth, and for months you may not see anything happening. It's all happening under the surface. Mm-hmm. And that time is as important, or not, maybe even more important, because without the stability of having the roots really taking hold, then the creation is more stable once there is really a stability in the roots.
Beautiful. Yes, I'm with you, sister. That's a great way to say it.
But sometimes we become impatient. We're like, okay, where's the leaves?
I know. Come on. I think we can all relate to that.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. It's like nature would never, force itself. If a tree has buds on it, you know, they're buds until they start to bloom. And then they often, on many trees, they bloom at different times. And so that's like us as people too. It's all happens at different times. And yeah, it's like the more connected I think we get to our true self and to our natural self, the easier that kind of part of the process can be.
Yeah, that was the first part of your answer, that you said really when you went away from how you thought it should be and just allowed it to be your authentic creation and contribution to the world, then that's when you really started to make things that resonated with other people. Not that that was your goal, but that was more of the result.
That's right. That's right. Like it, as a musician, as anyone who does their work through creating, and that's how they make their living. Of course, we want, and it's not just about making the living, it's about sharing. But we want people to love it. But yeah, when it's not that super focused, it's just like, it would be great if you guys love this as well. I'm going to do it for me. I'm going to do it because it's how it is. Then it's like, it's a much more relaxed approach, for sure.
It is an important point that we want our work to connect with other people, because that's our natural inclination as human beings, to want to connect. But connecting with others only comes from you or us being able to show our true self, not the version of ourselves of what we think we should be, but actually what we are. I've been reading the work of Brené Brown lately. I just picked up her book, Daring Greatly. A must read for any person. I'm like blown away by every word on the page. So if anybody's listening, run and get that book.
You know, I bought that book at an airport last year, and I haven't read it yet. So I've got it right here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read it.
I bought it like 5 or 6 years ago, and I just now picked it up. And it's so beautiful, because it's really about this, that if you don't show your true self, if you're not brave enough to be vulnerable, and vulnerable enough to show your truth, then there's always going to be something between you and the world. And the creative process is really about letting go of this something between you and the world, showing up as just you, who am I?
Yeah.
And then that's how we create the real meaningful connection that we're here to create.
Yeah, beautiful.
I know, I want to cry. This is like touching my heart in such a deep way. Thank you for all of these reminders.
Thank you.
Is there a misconception that you feel that is around the creative process, or is that kind of what we spoke about?
Yeah, well, I think sometimes for artists, the misconception, I guess we did talk about it. Sometimes the misconception can be that those quiet times when we're not outwardly producing something, that there's something wrong with that time. That would be a misconception. Or that it has to be a constant, or when we compare as creative people, if we compare ourselves to how others are producing or expressing, then that's an issue as well, because we're all here to be unique expressions of creation, right? And no matter what we're doing, it doesn't have to be art per se. And it's unique and incredibly special the way that it's coming through this one being. So to remember that and to not to compare, that would be something that I'd love there to be less of. Yeah, that'd be helpful definitely. For people. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. For all
and
of
is
us.
Is there a way that you find motivation to stay consistent with your practice?
Well, like more with my spiritual practice, my writing practice, or
well,
any of
both.
It? Yeah. To stay motivated is, I think for me, if I'm in a place where I'm feeling really healthy and rested, that actually helps me to, you know, just on a very specific example, to get up in the morning and to do my yoga and my meditation, it takes me, you know, not having stayed up late or, you know, eaten the wrong foods or, you know, like just if I'm really steady with my food and my what I'm doing, how much I'm consuming in terms of like technology, if I can keep that down, if I get a great sleep, then my practice in terms of my meditation and my stillness and my yoga, is much better supported. And also, for my musical, I tend to not have a writing, a specific writing or rehearsal schedule for myself. It kind of happens when it's going to happen. And this might not be the best advice for everyone, because some people work much better, you know, committing a certain amount of time a day, each day or each week to doing whatever it is that their creative expression is. But for me, I listen for the signs. And I move from that place. So it's more just like staying healthy, staying in a place of surrounding myself with love and joy, making sure that I find myself in situations with other people. Staying connected to other humans is really important to me. I think it's important to most humans. For some, it's even more. And nature. So just being well all around helps the creativity to emerge more naturally.
Definitely. I completely agree with you. And I feel that I'm the same way. I'm very intuitive with creation. I need to have like be in a certain mindset, a certain mood. And it definitely helps to just be in a well state of being in general. Definitely.
Yeah.
Brenda, I love this conversation so much. I'm so happy we were able to do it.
Me too.
To finish off, we can go to the closing curiosity questions.
Okay.
So the first one is, what is something you've changed your mind about?
At any point in my life or just recently or I used to think that I had some answers for things. I really did for many years that things were black and white you know? I always knew there was a bit of a gray area, but it was like sort of like, that's wrong, that's right. You know, those folks don't have it right, these ones do. And now I'm like, I feel like I'm much more open to the idea that I really don't know. I don't know the solid answers. And, you know, when I do think that, then I notice it feels really uncomfortable. So I've changed my mind around there being very definitive right and wrong to anything. And I know that's kind of a radical thing for some. It might be like, what, to anything? What do you mean? But I actually think that for me, that's true. So my, yeah, there's my answer. And I'll stick by it to the end. No, I'm just joking.
So that's the right
answer. Even that could change. That's right.
But I completely agree with you. So many times we think we know and then we're shown another piece of information and we're like, oh, I actually didn't know.
I know. Isn't it great? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You love that. What is something you didn't think you could do and you did?
Yes. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't think that I could, really live in a very healthy, weight for me in my body. Just speaking of the physical realm, about a year ago, I dropped a lot of weight and I don't think I, and then just, it just naturally is staying off and I'm living in a much healthier, physicality. And I didn't think I could do that because it had been like, since I was like 12, that I was just, you know, having issues with weight. And, so it was like, oh, I guess this is just the way it is. And then suddenly life was like, nope, now we're gonna just shed. So that was one thing I didn't think. And then I did. And it feels great.
Mm-hmm. Do you know to say if something shifted to create the change?
Yes. Yeah, there was a shift. And I remember the very moment, I was at a, intuitive acupuncturist appointment and she's amazing. And at the end, she said that she had, as she was doing the acupuncture, she had gotten a message from my body and my body wanted me to love it, really love it exactly as it is, exactly as it is. And I remember thinking as it is, but you know, I'd always kind of thought it's got to change, it's got to do this. So I'm like, okay. And there was, I definitely said, I'm going to do it. You know, even if it means I'm going to gain a whole bunch more weight or always be this way, like I just was going to love it the way it was. And then within days, I was guided into just shifting a lot of how my relationship with food and yeah, so it really was a moment of actually loving this body that carries me through life as it was. And then it shifted. So it's so interesting how that can work.
Yeah, yeah. Because it sounds like you kind of let go of fighting yeah. it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I really realized these things only happen when they're supposed to happen. Because I had tried for years to do that. And then suddenly it happened. So as I'm saying this, if anyone else is feeling that too, it's like, let's just keep being open to grace, as I had mentioned before, and to let things happen when they're supposed to. Everything's happening and it's perfect time. So I can't force things. We can't force things. It's just keep being available. Just keep being available.
Love that. Yeah. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope? Oh, it's just, I was thinking of this yesterday that, I see so many loving actions happening out in, I live in a small, a town in Mexico, and I see people being so good to each other all the time. Smiles and hellos and helping people on the street and nobody honks their horn at each other. Like, it's just like, you know, like people are like letting cars in and, you know, yeah,
I can't imagine.
You live in a big city. But here in my town anyway, it's just, there's a lot of gentleness going on. But this, what I'm saying now could be happening and is happening where you live, in Toronto, anywhere. There are so many more kind things going on than not, right? And so I've really been noticing it more and more. And I'm like, because I can look, you know, on my phone and see terrible things, you know, happening. Mm-hmm. But if I look outside, even just out my front window, I'm going to see love. I'm going to see compassion, kindness, joy. It really is all around. Sometimes we have to look harder for it, but that gives me hope. That makes me say, yeah, that's who we are innately. This is who we are. And we're going to get through what we need, what we're going through. So it's just, yeah, putting that focus
on
that part.
And it's really a choice to focus on the good things that are happening rather than watching the news all the time, which is, you know, feeding us with all the bad things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Last question. What is something you are curious about right now?
Well, I would say the thing that comes to mind is regenerative farming and permaculture. I've never been a gardener, and I'm just feeling like there is such a move going on among many communities, many people. It's like, how can we grow our own organic, like rich food? And so I'm really curious about it, and I want to start learning more and more about it and see how I can get involved in it.
I think
it's the wave of the future, right? It's the wave of the past. It's the wave of the future.
Yeah. That's my dream, to actually live in a place and grow my own food. It's like my 20 year vision.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Me too.
Amazing. Is there anything else that you would like to mention?
Well, maybe let's see. I'm not sure when it'll happen, but I will be putting out a new album. I betcha in the next 4 to 6 months. And so I'm quite excited. So I just want to share that excitement and so people can be on the lookout for that. I'm in the process. It's very awesome. And I also just want to say, to you, Yael, thank you so much for all that you do. And thank you for inviting me to come on to chat with you. It's been amazing.
Of course. Thank you so much. I've had so much fun. I heard exactly the messages I needed to hear for me personally. So I already feel like since the beginning of the conversation, it was like light bulb from before when we were recording. So thank you so much.
That's great. Thank you. I feel enriched so much by hearing what you had to say too, and just by what flowed between us. So yeah, thank you.
How can people stay connected with you?
Well, they could go to my website, and it's brendamcmorrow.com, and they can sign up for the mailing list, or on Instagram. If you type in Brenda McMorrow, my page, why am I forgetting what you call it on Instagram?
My profile.
You will come, you will be led to the profile, and that I keep pretty up to date. Lots of new things going on there, fun things. So yeah.
Cool.
Spotify.
Yes, Spotify. Definitely check out Brenda's Spotify. Her music is so beautiful. You have to go listen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brenda. Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there.
We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.